Thank you for joining us for Sermons on Demand from Friendship Grace Brethren Church. We provide these videos as a way to share the pulpit messages and teachings offered at Friendship Grace Brethren Church. If you find these videos a helpful resource, please drop us a note at info@friendshipgracebrethren.com. Now open your Bibles and get ready to dig into the Word of God. We continue in our walk through the book of Acts. Last week we saw the ship the Apostle Paul and his team were traveling on to Rome run into a lot of difficulty. It was fall. It was well past the season to go west in the Mediterranean. The prevailing wind would blow everything back toward the east. They were able to find another ship that was still trying to get there. And so the centurions put them on that boat. But then all they could hope for was getting a place to spend the winter. That sounded pretty good to them right about then. All things went bad after that. They were in a hurricane for 2 weeks. 2 weeks, God kept the hurricane spinning around the central Mediterranean Sea. They had thrown everything overboard and trying to make the ship run a little higher in the water. Paul was then visited by an angel who said that, listen, everybody will be fine. You're going to lose the boat, but everybody's going to be fine. Don't worry. Just take it easy. Relax. The angel also told Paul that they would run aground. Not what a sailor wanted to hear, but the way it was. The title of my message this morning is Shipwreck. You know, we've been on a few cruises. Those are not words that I'd want to hear coming out of the captain's mouth. Just like I'm sure that Ann's dad didn't like to be greeted in the airport. Hi, Jack. Same way, those words are not what you want to hear when you're on board a ship, right? You don't want to hear shipwrecked. But Paul was told by the angel, that's what's going to happen. Get prepared. We pick up the story, the account, in Acts chapter 27, verse 27. When the 14th night had come, as we were being driven across the Adriatic Sea, remember that phrase, Adriatic Sea, about midnight, the sailors suspected that they were nearing land. So they took a sounding and found 20 fathoms. A little farther, and they took a sounding again and found 15 fathoms. And fearing that we might run on the rocks, they let down the four anchors from the stern and prayed for a day to come. Here's the map we've been using. Verse 27 is just a little bit interesting. In most of our English translations, we read that the ship was driven across the Adriatic. The Adriatic, in our modern understanding, is this body of water here, between the boot of Italy and the Balkans, the Adriatic and then the Ionian Sea. Well, Paul's boat's not anywhere close to that. But clearly, it's not where they were. Is the problem with Dr. Luke? He doesn't know where he is? Or is the problem with our translation? The word translated in almost all English translations as Adriatic Sea is the Greek word Adria. Makes sense? Adria, Adriatic, makes sense. Except we have incontrovertible proof that the word Adria was used for this region of the Mediterranean in the 1st through the 4th centuries, BC or AD. So he didn't say they were in the Adriatic Sea up there by the boot of Italy. They were in the Adria, which is central Mediterranean. So there is no problem with what Dr. Luke says. He's using the words of the day to tell us where they were. That's why it's important for you to know historical context, to know what the words are and what they mean. Dr. Luke records that the sailors began to sense they were getting close to land around midnight. I don't know if you've ever been out on a boat when it's pitch black and you can't see the shore. It's disconcerting to not be able to see the shore. You get a sense of perspective when you can see the shore, but when you can't, it's like, now you're listening. When you're way out at sea, does it sound different than when you get close to shore? Of course. You get closer to shore, you start hearing waves and stuff. Unless you're like in, you know, Deadliest Catch in 50-foot seas out in the middle of nowhere. That's just nuts. So they began to sense they were getting close to land. So they took a sounding. Heavy weight attached to a rope that is marked in increments. The first sounding was 120 feet deep. Did you know what a fathom was? This is a fathom. The problem is it my fathom or is it Chuck's fathom? They're going to be different. That's kind of the problem with the cubit too, right? They took another sounding a little bit later and it was 90 feet deep. Clearly they're getting closer to the shore. They're getting closer to something. They don't know where they are. They're afraid that they're going to be driven down in here into Syrtis. And this is terrible, terrible difficulty. There's hundreds of shipwrecks in this region because it gets really shallow. There's a few reefs, there's a lot of sandbars, and so they're afraid they're being driven down that way. And so they lighten the load, get it a little higher in the water. 120 feet, now 90 feet. They're clearly getting closer to land. These were experienced sailors who knew the dangers of running aground or running on a reef. They knew that many of the islands in the Mediterranean had reefs around them. And so they knew the problems they could run into. So they let out four anchors from the stern of the ship. Putting out anchors from the rear of the ship was very unusual. If you watch Deadliest Catch or any of those other shows where they have a lot of boats, you see the anchor is always at the front, at the bow. But they let out four anchors from the stern of the ship, from the back of the ship. That makes a lot of sense if you're a good sailor that wants to make sure his ship drives to the ground. Because you want to keep your nose headed toward to where you want to go. If they had let the anchor out from the front, it would have turned around and they'd have backed into the reef. And that would have been even worse. By putting it around the back, the bow would remain facing the shore. Anchoring from the ship's rear was how they could give the best opportunity to protect the ship. It would also make it easier when they could see which way to go. If they dropped the anchor as they normally would, that wouldn't be the case. Talk to me afterwards if you want to know a little bit more about the potential for those anchors. Some archaeologists believe they found them. Verse 30. Whoops, I went too far. What happened to my verses? Okay, let me read them for you. And as the sailors were seeking to escape from the ship, they had lowered the ship's boat into the sea under pretense of laying out anchors from the bow. Paul said to the centurion and to the soldiers, "Unless these men stay in the ship, you cannot be saved." Then the soldiers cut away the ropes of the ship's boat and let it go. Last week we saw Paul give some advice to Julius and to the captain of the ship, and they said, "Okay, that's good, Paul, sit down, be quiet." Well, this time they listen. I don't know if it's because he had received a vision from or a report from the angel or what changed. They were listening to him. We saw that Paul had the opportunity last week to say, "I told you so." And so maybe they just kind of figured that he knows a little bit about what he's talking. So let's listen. Some of the sailors were trying to get away from the ship and thought they could put the dinghy back in the water and get away. They thought they would have a better chance, you know, how many ever of them there was, getting onto the little boat, sailing away from the ship. Perhaps they could be rescued. Paul warned them that everyone would be kept alive if everyone stayed with the ship. So Julius' men cut the dinghy away and it floated off while everyone remained on board. I bet there was a lot of consternation over that. I bet Julius was going, I hope I'm doing the right thing. The guys that didn't get on that little boat were saying, I hope he did the right thing. They all were thinking that, right? This was a bad, bad situation. This was the cruise of the ages for these guys, right? And as the day was about to dawn, Paul urged them to take some food, saying, today is the 14th day that you have continued in suspense without food, having taken nothing. Therefore, I urge you to take some food, for it will give you strength, for not a hair is to perish from the head of any of you. I find it fascinating that Paul was listened to by the sailors this time and by the soldiers. Paul reminded them, on the others on board, that they hadn't eaten in 2 weeks. Probably were seasick too. That's pretty bad when you don't eat and you still got the heaves. I puked every morning for 9 months before Linda and I got married. Every morning. And when you're working overnight, I don't know why. We never did figure out what happened, but after we got married, it stopped. I don't understand. I worked a lot overnight at EMS, and we'd get a call at 3 o'clock in the morning, and somebody else have to drive because my head was hung out over the side of the ambulance puking. But in the middle of the night, you don't have a lot in your stomach. That's just dry heaves. That's so uncomfortable. So these folks were in pretty bad shape. Paul was said to them, listen, you got to eat something. You need some strength because this next part is going to be difficult. Eat something. And so they did. Then he reminded them that he had heard from God and that none of them would be lost. So here's your first question. What characteristic is the Apostle Paul demonstrating here in this passage, in this point, in this passage? What's he saying? Have faith in God, he'll take care of you. God's provident, he said. Did you hear that, Brian?
You're up to six.
I think Paul's demonstrating trust and faith that God will do what he said he will do. He's trusting in what? God's sovereignty. He's trusting in God's omnipotence, His all-powerfulness, that he knows everything, that he can control it. He's trusting that God is actually who God says he is. He's trusting that God will do what he says he will do, that he's honest. I have to imagine that the demeanor on the boat was pretty low. Pretty bad right about then. I have to imagine that everyone was doing whatever they could to save themselves, and not so much looking out for others, but Paul was looking out for others. He was focused on the people and taking care of them and not himself. He trusted God and didn't need to worry about himself. Paul's a great example to all of us. He wasn't worried about himself, and so he cared for the others. You know, we have an opportunity in the political climate that we have right now to not care about ourselves and take care of others. As Dr. Ware talked about in the Sunday school time, we have an opportunity to share God's love with people because that's the only thing that's going to change our society. We have an opportunity to do that now, perhaps a greater opportunity than we've ever had. Don't worry about yourself. Take care of those around you. And when he had said these things, he took bread and, giving thanks to God in the presence of all, he broke it and began to eat. Then they all were encouraged and ate some food themselves. We were in all 276 persons on the ship. And when they had eaten enough, they lightened the ship, throwing out the wheat into the sea. Paul prays for the food, and then they all eat. The picture that we have there is that he gave thanks for it, and then he gave them to eat, like Jesus did before the cross. Dr. Luke tells us there were 276 people on board the ship. When we read this passage, we often think that the 276 people on the ship ate some food after not eating for 14 days and began to feel better. But look at the order of what Dr. Luke tells us. And when he had said these things, he took the bread, giving thanks to God in the presence of all, he broke it and began to eat. He began to eat. And they were all encouraged and ate some food themselves. Notice what happened here. Paul's words encouraged them so that they no longer rejected the idea of putting something in their stomach that would become projectiles should they vomit again. They were encouraged by Paul's faith. They were encouraged by Paul's trust in God. Paul's courage, trust, and faith rubbed off on the rest of the people on the ship. And they were encouraged by it. And they could see, it's no longer the end for me. I might as well eat because I've got some work to do. Why eat if you're just going to die? Never understood the last meal before a condemned prisoner. What's the point? Right? And the guys that have salad, I mean, what's up with that? It's not like their arteries are going to be having a problem. Here these people were encouraged because Paul had faith. Sorry. Paul had encouraged them, not because of food, but because of his faith and trust in God. We have a real opportunity in our world to demonstrate faith and trust in God and to have an impact on those around us. The vast majority of the people we talk to are scared of what's happening to us, happening around us. They're scared of what's going on in the world. We need to demonstrate our faith in God. We have to believe He's sovereign, in control of everything. To quote Dr. Del Tackett from the Tooth Project, do you really believe that what you believe is really real? Do you really believe that what you believe is true? That it's really real? We say God is sovereign, do we actually act like it? Or do we cower every time things happen around us? Do you really believe that what you believe is really real? Now, when it was day, they did not recognize the land, but they noticed a bay with a beach, which they planned, if possible, to run the ship ashore. So they cast off the anchors and left them in the sea, and at the same time, loosening the ropes, they tied the rudders, or that tied the rudders. Then hoisting the foresail to the wind, they made for the beach. But striking a reef, they ran the vessel aground. The bow struck and remained immovable, and the stern was being broken up by the surf. Things were not getting a lot better for them. They could see the shore. They didn't know where they were. They didn't recognize the island. These sailors had never been to Malta before. But they recognize there's kind of a bay we can get into that'll protect us. There's a beach we can run ashore on and we'll be okay. Not knowing that there was a reef, they cut away the anchors. They loosened the rudder so they could steer. They raised the sail in the front of the ship and allowed the wind to push them until they went kabam into the reef. And the front of the ship sticks firm and the back is being tossed and broken. It was a very difficult and serious situation. To understand how serious, look what the soldiers wanted to do. The soldiers' plan was to kill the prisoners lest any of them should swim away and escape. But the centurion, wishing to save Paul, kept them from carrying out their plan. He ordered those who could swim to jump overboard first and make for land. and the rest on planks or on pieces of the ship, so that it was that they were all brought safely to land. For the soldiers, this was the worst possible situation. Paul could not have been the only prisoner on board, because they talked about prisoners plural. Dr. Luke says the soldiers wanted to kill the prisoners. That was their right, to prevent them from escaping. They feared the prisoners would escape, which would place a death penalty on the soldiers. If they didn't die in the reef, they would be dead by Rome, because they allowed prisoners to escape. Paul evidently had some impact on Julius. You know, they were a few weeks together now. There was some impact there. Julius trusted Paul now. Remember at the beginning, he didn't, and then he did, and now he wants to protect him. So he prevented the soldiers from executing the prisoners. Julius then ordered everyone to get off the ship. If you can swim, get off. If you can't, grab a board, grab a life ring. Grab whatever you can. Grab the cushions under your seat back chair. If they couldn't swim, take a hold of something and get off the boat. Start for shore. Look at the last line. And so it was that they were all brought safely to land. Just like Paul had been told, right? God said they'll all get there. Paul was confident. They were confident. I want to begin my conclusion this morning with a question. What's the theme of this chapter, the chapter that we worked through last week and this week? What's the theme? Trust the Lord? Any other word that would come to mind? Trust the Lord in both good times and bad times. Okay. Okay. Paul's personality. How he cared for people. God does the improbable to do the... Does the impossible to do the improbable? The other way around, yeah. I think the theme is hope. Hope combined with the reality of God's sovereignty and dependability. Hope is really a human requirement. As I was studying this chapter, I read a commentary who cited a case study on miners, not children, but people that dig mines, that get trapped. Underground problems and get trapped in mines. There's several things they need. The first thing that they need immediately is oxygen. They need air in order to breathe. That's an immediate need. Without it, you die pretty quick. They need water, or they die a little bit slower. You know, if you're down there for days and days and days and don't have water, you're going to die. They also need hope. If they don't have hope, they die, but they die even more slowly. Hope is an emotion that is necessary to function. You've got to have some sort of idea that you're going to get through it. We can't make it if we don't have hope. Every bit of our life demands hope. The Apostle Paul wrote to the Romans before he went there, "Rejoice in hope, be patient in tribulation, be constant in prayer." The Apostle Paul brought 276 people on the boat that hope. He expressed to them, "I've heard from God, the creator, sustainer of the universe, and he said, we're getting out of this. Trust him. Have a little bit of hope." He represented, Paul said, listen, I represent the sovereign God. And he encouraged them to have faith, not eternal life-saving faith, but life-saving faith. Faith that what Paul told them was true, that they could have hope in it. Paul also said to the Ephesians, having the eyes of your hearts enlightened, that you may know what is the hope to which he has called you. What are the riches of his glorious inheritance in the saints? Paul did this through his own faith in God. He was confident in God, and he acted like it. And he told the people around him to trust God, to have hope, a dependence on him. How do you act when all the things around you are going crazy? Do you demonstrate faith and hope in God? Do you believe that what you believe is really real? What's happening around us gives us a great opportunity to demonstrate the faith and trust we have in God, the sovereign God, the creator, sustainer of the universe. But that only works when we actually act like we have faith. If when things happen around you, you fall apart and you go nuts, you don't demonstrate faith. Paul, I hope we get to see this. Paul on the deck, you know, they're being tossed and tossed and guys on the side rail puking. And you just, you know, you get the whole picture, right? And Paul goes up to Julius and to the captain and says, listen, I have heard from God, we'll all be fine, just do this. Get something to eat, we're going to need it. I'm not saying that you have to agree with everything that everybody says around you. That won't get you anywhere. You can disagree. Not hate, but you can disagree. You can disagree with what's going on and still trust God. In fact, that's when we have the greatest impact on those around us. When we don't agree, and you can have the conversation, and you can tell them, listen, I'm trusting God. I'm not afraid for what comes tomorrow. Because if a truck runs over me tomorrow, I'm with him. I'm okay with that. I was just going to say it'd probably suck for Linda, but it probably wouldn't. Probably miss me a little, but she won't have to pick up for me. Perhaps God in his sovereignty is using the current events to provide the church with the ability to demonstrate our trust in him. Perhaps God has orchestrated our world the way it is so that the church can stand tall and say, listen, we trust him. Maybe that's what's going on here. We have the opportunity to speak for Jesus. Whether it's when you're on your golf cart going around the neighborhood, you're prayer carting, or you're helping people load up their trucks, or you're talking to your neighbors or your friends or your family. Show a dependence on God and a trust in him and be faithful to him. God in his sovereignty has orchestrated our world to put us in a place where we are right now. We have the opportunity to talk for him, to show confidence in him. Remembering that God appoints the rulers, and he does it for a reason, even if you don't understand it. Father, thank you. Thank you for your sovereignty. Thank you for your ability to accomplish all that you have around us. Father, it looks like the world around us is going cuckoo. It looks like it's very difficult for us to go another day, week, month without everything just blowing up. We have an opportunity to show dependence on you, trust in you, hope in you. Remind us of that every day. Remind us that we have now an opportunity to stand tall for you in spite of what's going on in the world. And let people know that we trust you. that we've heard from you and things will be okay. Thank you for loving us. Thank you for these folks. Thank you for the opportunities you give us. We love you in Jesus' name.
Thank you for watching or listening to this teaching on demand from Friendship Grace Brethren Church. Please consider sending us an email at info@friendshipgracebrethren.com to let us know how this teaching may have helped you. Please also consider joining us in person at Friendship Grace Brethren Church, located at 10251 Metro Parkway, Suite 116, Fort Myers, Florida, just south of the intersection of Metro and Colonial Boulevard. Sunday school begins at 9 and worship service at 10 a.m. We look forward to seeing you in person at Friendship Grace Brethren Church.